This episode of GameScoop is sponsored by Squarespace. If you're looking for a way to make your business stand out and succeed online, Squarespace is the all-in-one website platform for you. They take the stress out of creating an awesome website, engaging with your audience, and selling anything from products to content to time, so you're able to focus on, you know, everything else. In other words, you'll have more time for gaming. With the new guided design system, you can choose from curated layouts and styling options to build a unique online presence from the ground up, optimized for every device. And with Squarespace's integrated, optimized SEO tools, you'll show up more often to more people. Squarespace doesn't just make things easier for you. Checkout for your customers is made seamless with simple but powerful payment tools that allow you to accept credit cards, PayPal, and Apple Pay, and in eligible countries, offer the option to buy now and pay later with Afterpay and Clearpay. So whether you're just starting out or looking to expand your existing brand, be sure to visit squarespace.com for a free trial, and when you're ready to launch, go to squarespace.com/gamescoop to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. That's squarespace.com/gamescoop for 10% off. You know, when it comes to wireless carriers, sometimes what you see isn't always what you get. Except with Visible. With Visible, what you see is exactly what you get. If you haven't heard of Visible, well, now you have. They're the wireless carrier that's making wireless visible. It's in the name. With Visible, there are no hidden fees, no fine print, no hassle, nothing to hide. It's just $25 a month, all taxes and fees included. And you don't need more than one line of wireless to save. You can save on a line all to yourself with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. And again, just $25 a month. The future of wireless is here, and it is transparent. If you want more transparency in your wireless plan, you want to be on the Visible plan. Switch to Visible today and save at Visible.com. That's Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com. What's up, everybody? Welcome to IGN GameScoop. I'm your host, Damon Hatfield. With me this week is Greg Miller. Ryan Geddes is here.
Hey, guys.
And Charles Onyet is here.
He's back. He's making his return.
I'm so happy to be able to be on GameScoop. Yeah. And to be on with Charles, I miss being on podcasts with Charles every once in a while.
Mm-hmm. A Charles episode is a good episode.
It is. It always is.
It's like the old Batman show when you'd wait through the credits and then you'd see Batgirl ride across on the bicycle that, or her motorbike, you know. That way you knew Batgirl was in the episode and you got really excited. you just rode across on your Mr. Slime motorcycle.
Okay. I was watching the more recent Batman cartoon, like not the animated series one, but
Brave
it's called
the
like The Batman. I don't know how old
the
that
Batman.
Is.
Oh, The Batman. Yeah, yeah. Since then, now there's Batman Brave and the Bold.
And it just reminds me how awesome the animated series was. Like, it's like so far above and beyond like anything
else. It
was
really good.
Anyway, sorry. I just wanted to make that point. So I was watching that. I was like, you know, I don't like the art style. Everything's really goofy. There's nothing serious about this.
Batgirl's hot in the animated series as well.
You know, last weekend we were at PAX East recording a live GameScoop podcast. Uh-huh. It was actually episode 200, so it's coming to you in the future.
How many more weeks till that?
Well, this is episode 198, I believe.
Okay.
So in a couple weeks.
Okay. It's already up in video form. You can find videos of it.
But I was saying, we were showing GameScoop tunes at the podcast, and when Charles showed up in the
huge
GameScoop
pop.
Tunes, you got a big big applause.
Pop. People love Mr. Slime.
Yeah. Well, thank you, everyone.
A lot of people asked me about you, too. Where you were, why you won't say penis. Those are the two questions I got to like about you a lot.
Very important questions.
Oh, just before the podcast started, we also learned that Damon does not like the word slurp very much.
Well, I had never really thought about it before, but when Charles said it, I was like, oh, I don't want to.
Yeah.
No, thank you. No mas.
Yeah.
Don't want that one. Mm-hmm. You want to thank people for PAX?
No.
PAX was great.
Oh, PAX was fantastic.
Thank you all for coming out. Thank you for the support. Thank you for coming to meet and greet. Thank you for coming to the panel.
We are in love with all of you.
Yeah.
Personally. The meet and greet was great. The panel was awesome. Yeah. Super fun times. And we'll do it again PAX Prime. Someone wrote in this week to ask if we were going to have a meet and greet at San Diego Comic Con. And yes.
Of course we will.
Greg and Hillary and I will be there, and we'll definitely have another meet and greet. I don't know if it'll be at Dick's Last Resort again or not, but anyway.
Well, we'll figure something out.
Also,
if you're coming to WonderCon, let me know. I would love to do something at WonderCon. Just hang out with people. Go drink it. I'll be at WonderCon.
You've tried this before. You've tried to meet people at WonderCon before, and nothing worked out, right?
Well, now it's different. Now it's come further. I don't know what the hell's going to happen. Anyways, Eddie Rickenbacker's right there. It's easy. We can walk right there and get drunk.
Speaking of.
I'll be cosplaying as Charles.
Oh, God. Please never show me whatever that looks like.
Walk around on stilts.
We're just going to talk about Canada a lot.
Let's do something crazy this week. Let's start out the show talking about PC stuff.
What?
I know.
We don't PC ever, stuff? You mean like Facebook?
Yeah, exactly.
So this is the return of Control-Alt-Tab, IGN's premier PC podcast.
It was called Control-Alt-Tab, yes.
What would happen if you press Control-Alt-Tab?
Don't press that. Well, but listeners, do not press that.
It deletes your Dragon Age saves. I don't know.
Very specific
Dragon Age
function.
1 or 2?
It doesn't matter.
Uh-oh.
It's indiscriminate. That's the proper word.
No, you're right.
Charles, this little game called Total War Shogun 2.
Oh, hey, I know that game.
Came out this week.
Yes, it did.
It's available on the personal computer.
Your parents help you set it up.
Yes, if you have a personal computer, you can play Shogun 2. And yeah, I mean, I thought it was great. Like, I've been playing the Total War game since the series started, basically, with Shogun. Shogun
this
was
is
the
not
original.
Like, this is not mostly war. This is not
total
like
war.
Partial war.
It's
this is total war.
Why didn't they call it all-out war?
Because there's a hyphen.
Yeah, that's true.
Hyphens just get in the way. Hyphens are not good for marketing.
I mean, they've already got a colon in the title.
They've got the colon.
You can't add
so they're fine.
A hyphen and a colon.
Yeah. The hyphen-colon combo is just killer.
This is why you're not allowed to name any Neutron Synergy games.
I named many of the Neutron... Well, we're getting off topic here. I want Charles to tell me all about his cute little PC game. That
it's just adorable.
This is a Facebook one, right?
You play it with a keyboard. I saw all the
You use
men.
A keyboard and a mouse to control it.
Yeah, if you buy the retail version, it comes with a little pink bow. And just all... It's adorable. But no, it's really good. It's the sequel to the first Total War game. Creative Assembly's been making these games for... over a decade now, and it's basically turn-based strategy, so sort of like Civilization.
It makes me salivate, and it makes me hate the fact that I can't play it on a console.
And it looks, I mean, if you just look at screenshots and video, it looks amazing. Like, the visuals are incredible. And that's the in-game stuff, so that's the second half. There's, like, the turn-based map strategy game, and then there's real-time battles with, like, thousands of, in this case,
little
katana
men.
Infantry. Yes, little men all tied up with bows, and they pop out of presents and throw bears at each other.
That sounds amazing.
Yeah, it's really intense.
Will it run on my MacBook Pro?
I don't know if you can get this for Mac. I don't think you can.
Will it run on my ZX Spectrum?
All right, enough of the fake questions. The real question, like, I was watching your video review. I'd love to play this game, but you were saying it's a hog, right? Like, I would need a giant, awesome PC.
But yeah, I mean, I was playing it on some less powerful systems, so something that doesn't have, like, near top of the line video cards, and it certainly runs better than Total War games past, because Creative Assembly has had issues with, like, optimization for, like, Empire, for instance, which did not run very well when it came out. This one certainly runs better, but yeah, I mean, if you want to see all of the detail in the game, which is amazing, like, yeah, you're gonna need probably an expensive PC. Or fairly, like, not outrageously expensive, but if you have one that's, like, you know, 5 or 6 years old, which I feel like a lot of people do, it's like, oh, I haven't bought a new computer in a while, you know, can I still run this? And it's like, maybe, but it's probably not going to look very good.
What did you give Shogun 2, a 9?
Yeah, I gave that a 9. I mean, I think that game is definitely, like, way up. It's going to be really hard to top that for, like, strategy game of the year. It's, like, it's an all-inclusive package, and it has, like, a ridiculous, like, multiplayer component.
You're calling it in March. Strategy
Swish,
game of the year.
It's over.
I'm not calling it strategy game of the year.
Confirmed.
I'm saying it's going to be very difficult for any other game to come close to what Creative Assembly did with Shogun 2. And
is
it's
there
just...
any game on the horizon that you're looking at that you think actually could give it a run for its money? Or is it just totally the slate is blank and you don't see anything?
Maybe else? If StarCraft, the next StarCraft game comes out somehow this year, which is totally not going to. That's absolutely not
I can't even
happening,
think of any
way.
Other strategy games that are coming out this year.
I can't think of any that would challenge Shogun 2.
If you're out there and you were thinking about putting out a strategy game this year,
it's over.
You
don't
should
do it.
Probably don't
it's
do
over.
It. Yeah,
don't do it.
All right. So basically, we're saying Shogun 2, folks. Feel free to put IGN Game of the Year 2011 logos on the box.
Just go ahead and do it.
Well, it's over.
Charles has already spoken.
I was going to say,
Mr. Slime has decreed
the multiplayer component is also really cool because it has there's a ton of content. They almost did like a Call of Duty like unlock thing with the online component. So you have like a persistent like avatar that you can. This is the dress up part. You can outfit them with like different pieces of armor and stuff like that. And you have like a persistent online campaign map that you can run across, cool. Which is totally different from the offline campaign map, which coincidentally can also be played cooperatively or against another person, like in the full campaign.
So like Damon and I could run through the entire campaign like cooperatively?
Yeah, you could play a campaign working together.
It would never work. Eventually
you'd stab we would tear each other apart. Yeah. That's awesome though. That's
yeah,
really
no,
cool.
it's like there's so much content in the game, there's so many features. It's like it is such a complete game, and it works properly. And it
works.
Yes, it works.
It really, really works.
Important. I've been worried about the Total War franchise just because, you know, a lot of people take these, you know, like we see with XCOM, like they take older franchises that people know in the PC realm and then they turn them into something different that maybe has more of a mass market appeal. And that's absolutely not what Creative Assembly did. Like they have a much better presentation for the game, so it's much easier to understand like what you're supposed to do, and everything looks really pretty, but it still has like all the depth that any Total War fan would expect.
Yeah, we were talking about it when the game first came in for you to actually start playing around with. I hadn't seen it before. I didn't know what the past Creative Assembly games were like, and I walked by and I was like, wow, the UI looks really good on this game, like the user interface, the way you interact with the game. It drew my eye even as someone who's not knowledgeable at the game. And you were saying to me that kind of they had changed their ways a lot and really focused on making sure that the game was easy to get into.
Yeah, apparently they focused on having their artists actually design the UI. So it does not look like a spreadsheet. It looks like, you know, a game UI. And they've been pretty good about interface in the past, but this one in particular, it's like it doesn't feel like you're studying something when you're learning how to play the game. It feels much more game-like, which I think, you know, helps to draw in more people, hopefully, to this franchise so it can continue like this.
You think it'll sell?
I hope so. Yeah, I mean, it's being advertised all over the place. I would imagine it's on like you know, like Steam, like PC sites, stuff like that.
I just wonder if the time for games like that to sell really big has passed.
Well, how did Civ 5 do?
I don't remember the exact figures, but I mean, I think it's sold.
I would think that's kind
Civ 5 has more mass appeal than Shogun. Yeah,
I think Civ certainly has a lot more people who aren't necessarily into strategy games all the time know about Civ and don't necessarily play Total War games or have as much of an awareness about them.
Shogun seems to me like that kind of game where you'd be a dad would be at Best Buy or something, and he'd be looking at the games and he would see that one and be like, wow, this looks really awesome. I'm going to buy this, rather than somebody who you could really market that game to.
I mean, I don't know.
Let's go to Best Buy this weekend and watch the Shogun Isle. Let's see.
I hope a lot of people pick this up. And I mean, Steam has so many users at this point that it's, you know, I would imagine most of them are aware that this game came out.
And if you need a PC that can run it, just ask Charles. He's got a bunch of them sitting at his desk.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, I'll just hand them out.
I wonder if setting the game in Japan like limits its audience, you know? Because like we love Japan, but I talk to people all the time who don't really get why I like Japan, you know?
Okay, well, yeah. I will argue the game has ninjas in it.
Well, I mean, that's awesome.
Yes.
I think that's amazing.
There are ninjas in the game. And I mean, there's such a degree of depth there that as you use your ninja, so you can walk him around the campaign map to sabotage, like, city gates to make them easier to invade, and you can assassinate generals in the field.
That's awesome.
And as you do that, there's, you know, your ninja will gain experience, and he will gain levels. You can build out an entire skill tree unique to every single ninja. So if you have multiple ninjas walking around, they can all be built with different skill builds, and they'll gain retainers that can give additional bonuses. So they're basically rolling around with like an entourage of like ninja people. And
I need to get me one of those.
Yeah, it's like there's so much to the game. It's just like it's a game you can play for a very long time and not sort of run out of things to do.
Damon, can I be in your entourage of ninja people?
Of course.
What skills do you want to give me?
You you can... I think you're just going to like throw a smoke bomb and escape.
Damon, we're in trouble. Go! All right, good. I can do that.
You're not really a fighter yourself, you know?
That's true.
You're not really a killer.
You know, they call me a pit bull on a leash. No, they don't?
Never heard anyone call you that.
I think Charles did.
Total War Shogun 2 is out now. I want to play it. Also out now for PC is Assassin's Creed Brotherhood.
I've not played that.
But it's out now.
Finally. Charles, would you go play it, actually?
Well, right now?
Yeah.
Okay, I'll just load that up on. I actually bring a gaming tower along with me wherever I go.
I remember Charles used to bring in a small stack of PC-related stories.
Mm-hmm. I did not bring the stack in today.
I know.
Those were the days.
That was a long time ago.
It was.
1978.
Good to have you back, Charles.
Well, just saying, best game... possible best game of the year, Dino D-Day, coming up pretty soon.
Dino D-Day, yes.
You've sent me a link to that. It looks amazing. I actually wanted to play it immediately after Charles sent it to me.
I think it's supposed to come out pretty soon, but I mean, who knows? It's not a huge game, but it should be pretty hilarious.
The screenshot you showed me was a guy holding a 9mm to the head of a pterodactyl.
What? No way, really?
I was like, let's play this right now.
It combines Nazis and dinosaurs.
What?
Yeah. It should be pretty interesting.
What did we give the PC version? Was it a good
Assassin's Creed? Yeah, yeah. Exactly the same as the console. Got an 8.0 from Cam, one of our Australian editors.
Yeah, I haven't actually checked that game out yet, so I don't know how it runs or anything like that. But yeah, it seems to be good.
Brotherhood was a lot of fun.
Yeah, you liked it.
Yep.
I still haven't finished that one yet.
You're gonna be completely lost when Assassin's Creed 3 starts up. I'll tell you right now.
I know. Out this week on PSN is Hardcore Uprising.
Booyah!
Came out on XBLA a couple weeks ago. Really, really good Contra game. I gave it 8.5. I really like that one a lot.
Sam Claiborne called it the best Contra game he's ever played.
Exactly. Straight up, you know, Contra run and gun action, but they added RPG elements. And as we all know, RPG elements improve any game. Yeah, for sure. But don't take my word for it. Try Hardcore Uprising for yourself. I have a code here for one lucky listener. This is for the PlayStation Network version. Fast fingers, listeners. Here we go. EA9524NADT4A. Please to enjoy Hardcore Uprising on PlayStation Network.
Oh yeah.
It's really good. Have you played it any, Greg? Since?
No. Okay. I watched you play it.
Well, you should check it out.
I know, I'm going to. Me and Colin have a date, I think, this weekend to play.
You know, I've never been a fan of Mortal Kombat.
Mortal Kombat!
But I'm really loving everything I see about the new Mortal Kombat game.
It brings back memories, doesn't it?
Yeah, so it does.
Like, that's what I love about Mortal Kombat. I'm not a huge fighting game fan in general, but I have such vivid memories of being in my friend's basement where he had the game when I was a kid. Mm-hmm. And, the first one when it came out, and it was, like, the most amazing thing that any of us had ever seen, like, how gory it was, how over the top. Like, mm-hmm. I can remember being in the living room. And after that, you know, as the game series went on, I lost interest because it was kind of a one-off for me. But I'm like you. Like, when I watched the Fatalities trailer
that we had,
or not the trailer, but the clips, I was like, this is just – it's just visceral reaction to the old school.
Yeah, totally. I watched that clip, and I actually had a similar kind of reaction. For me, it was in a hockey arena I used to play in all the time. There, of course, was an arcade room there.
Oh, there you go.
And on one side of the room – was the first Mortal Kombat game, and then the other side was Mortal Kombat 2. And of course, everyone played Mortal Kombat 2. Like, there was always a crowd around there, and then if somebody got bored watching it, they would just go play Mortal Kombat for a while. But really, they were just waiting to play Mortal Kombat 2, because it had better graphics.
How many hockey games did you miss because of that?
No, this
Charles,
was...
we need you on the ice! Sub-Zero needs me in the game, sir.
But there was always the one guy in the arcade who knew all of
every fatality.
Yeah, and everyone was just always mystified about how he knew all of them, because it's not like, oh, I'll just go on the internet.
You'd beg him to tell you, he wouldn't.
Yeah,
and just make up stories. I had a friend. We were playing the Mortal Kombat 1, I believe, right, where you could take a Shenzhen into Goro and kill him that way. Mm. And if you remember to do that, when you had to hold like A for like 30 seconds, and one day my friend just stumbled upon that and did that to me, like, bullshit. He wouldn't tell me. He's like, I don't know what I did. I just did it. Like,
right, yes.
I remember, back in the day, like, Mortal Kombat in the arcades always seemed kind of, like, trashy to me. Like B-movie, like, Grindhouse, like, that sort of, like, you know, sort of, like, low-budget, like, gory. Do you know what I mean?
Well, I didn't have the awareness at the time of that's what it was.
Yeah.
All I knew was that it was, like, forbid. It was, like, a taboo thing.
Yeah.
And it's interesting that you guys' memories are from the arcade. Mine was from the consoles.
Yeah, me too.
And I was never – I played in the arcades, but I don't think my arcade at the mall when I was that age had a Mortal Kombat unit.
So – you had it, or your friend?
My friend had it.
He must have had it on Genesis.
Yeah, I had an NES, and I didn't get to upgrade to the SNES.
Okay.
So, my friend had that next sort of generation, and I played it at his house.
Because when Mortal Kombat came out on consoles, it came out on Genesis and Super Nintendo at the same time, And in the Super Nintendo version, the blood was all gray.
So lame.
So it was the Genesis version.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
But yeah, so you knew you had to get the Genesis.
I had a friend who, Mortal Kombat 1 on Genesis he got, and then I bought Mortal Kombat 2 on Genesis.
That was like the start of how Nintendo was started to be viewed as like a more family-friendly console, and Sega was like a more hardcore.
The Edge.
Yeah.
We got Toe Jam and Earl and Blood. Get over it.
Yeah, it was like that, and like, oh, the sports games are so much better on Genesis. Yeah. It was always the NHL argument.
And their commercials always ended with somebody yelling at you. Yeah, exactly. So that's pretty hardcore.
Yeah.
But anyway, what I was saying, how I was describing what I thought about the original Mortal Kombat in the arcades, I feel like they've captured that sort of feel in this game. The music still sounds like a little, like, I like it, but it still sounds a little, like cheap, you know, like a little grungy to me. I don't know. Like, it kind of reminds you of, like, I could hear it coming out of an arcade speaker back in the day.
Yeah, the game's always been really sort of clunky in how it controls and how it looks.
Because, you know, they used the, like, digitized graphics back in the day.
How the animations, like, flow into each other, and it's always...
Well, we're putting together Mortal Kombat in 5 minutes. It's actually... There is a storyline to the game. It's ridiculous.
Really easy to follow.
Oh, yeah. Super, super easy. That's going up probably next week, so look for it. But the thing that was interesting to me about it was when we were editing it, Craig Baird, on our crack video producer, was editing it, and I was looking at him, and they do things like spelling... Like, this was back in the time when the story stuff was all just kind of slammed in there at the last minute. Raiden, of course, his name is spelled differently two different ways. It's spelled with a Y, and then it's spelled with an I, just depending on which game you're looking at.
Nice.
It's like amazing to think about that time and how...
Ed Boon knows fatalities. Ed Boon doesn't know spelling.
He doesn't care. He doesn't care about that.
So is the Noob Saibot character, is that like the origin... Is Boon's name the origin of Noob that now dominates the internets? Like, is that...
Oh, I don't know about Noob.
Because it was, I mean, it was Noob Saibot way back in MK2, and I don't believe that Noob was actually used as a term at that point.
No, it wouldn't have been, I don't think.
Yeah, so I'm just curious if, like, that term sort of drew out of Mortal Kombat, if that's, like, the genesis for that.
Whoa.
I don't know.
It's crazy.
Scoop!
I've
wondered as well, but I've never researched.
I don't know if that even is researchable. I don't know if you can possibly research that.
The Wikipedia page wouldn't have something about it. I'm sure there are a million kids right now screaming at their iPods. They know the answer.
You idiots!
You are so dumb, IGN. Has anybody used the Mortal Kombat Fight Stick?
No.
It's really nice.
It's a new one?
Yeah.
So how does the...
Is it already out?
Have you played the new one? How does it play?
Like the old Mortal Kombat.
Really?
Like, I was trying to play it on the 360, and the D-pad was terrible. I was like, can't do this. No way. And, like, you could use the stick, obviously, but I'm more of a console guy. But then I know, like, I was playing with Sid Schumann from PlayStation Blog, and he's super into fighting games, and he was just doing amazing things with that fight stick. And it's really solid, nice casing. You can open it up, and if you're one of those guys, mod it out however you want on the inside and stuff.
Can you drop an ATI Radeon card in there?
I don't think so.
That's really disappointing. You should definitely be able to do that.
It's been a while since we have just, like, a straight... Mortal Kombat game. I assume you can play online now.
I believe so, yeah.
I mean, that
for sure.
Right.
Yes, you can. Probably.
Would this be the first Mortal Kombat game you can play online? Or
Mortal Kombat versus DC.
Could you do that also in DC? You
yes,
play online?
Yes, you could, I believe.
Which is still the dumbest game that came out in this generation.
Who doesn't want to be Batman?
Well, yeah, I'll be Batman.
You understand two of the biggest games this year were in the same game a couple years ago.
Yeah, separate, they're great.
Together, they're unstoppable.
It's like chocolate and peanut butter.
It's just like what we were talking about, how much we loved watching those fatalities in Mortal Kombat. That's what it's about.
Yeah.
And they took all of that out for Mortal Kombat versus DC.
That's why it's cool to talk to Ed Boon about this game, or anybody who's really involved, right? Is that they're not, you know, we fucked up last time. But they're like, you know, we had to make it a T game, and we tried something new, and that was cool or whatever, you know, blah, blah. Now we're able to come here and be super hardcore and push the envelope and do the X-ray moves where you're framing in as you crack someone's skull on your knee, as you kick someone so hard in the stomach they vomit on your leg. Like, that's awesome. Like, you know what I mean? Like, they totally were like, whatever. The headless mode, like, there's so many goofy modes.
Lots of extra stuff that they're adding.
There's
in this
300
game, right?
Challenges in the challenge tower. There's a ton of
stuff. Are they the same? Does it have animality? And babalities.
No, they got rid of all that crap. They were like, we're going to give you a real Mortal Kombat that's really hardcore and really bloody and about killing people and about blood.
Amazing.
Great. Charles, you like the fighting games. Like, you're a big Street Fighter fan. You loved Super Street Fighter.
Yeah.
Or 4, I mean.
Yeah, Super Street Fighter 4.
So are you excited for Mortal Kombat? The new Mortal Kombat?
Not really. So my thing with Mortal Kombat is I always felt that it was more of an arcade experience. Like, I would get excited going to the arcades to play that game because it was a spectacle, because it felt... You know, like, I was watching an R movie before I was even allowed to watch an R movie. And it was when I finally, I eventually bought the home version when it came out on Genesis, and I was so excited for it. And then I played it for until I did all of the fatalities. Like, I just sat there with, like, a list of what the fatality moves were. I ran through all the fatalities, and then I was like, I don't want to play this anymore. Like, the fighting wasn't interesting to me. Hmm. Whereas when, like, Championship Edition for Street Fighter came out on Genesis, I would just play that game constantly against the computer. I bought, like, the six-button game
turbo,
pads or
turbo
whatever.
Turbo pad, yeah.
It was, like, that was a game I played for the fighting system, whereas, Mortal Kombat, I just, once the sort of novelty wore off, I never actually got into the mechanics of the system. I just thought it was
Mortal Kombat was like the first party game. I mean, that's a game that was the most fun when you had a bunch of people around. I'm talking about the console version, you know. I mean, arcade's the same, right? But if you don't have a bunch of people around it, it's not any fun.
Yeah.
Whereas, like, Street Fighter can be fun on its own.
And I mean, I feel like when I was playing Mortal Kombat, like, if somebody messed up a fatality input sequence, then everyone was like, nobody cares what happens during the match. It's like, oh, you did an uppercut, you threw a fan, oh, that's amazing, acid all over the place. Oh, you missed the fatality? Oh, ruined, I'm going home. Like, that is, like, the make-or-break point is the fatality.
Yeah. So I wonder why not bring the new Mortal Kombat to arcades? You know, you said you mentioned it's more of an arcade experience
for you. Oh, because
there's
no arcades anymore.
Well, like, yeah, really. Street Fighter 4 came out, you know, that has an arcade cabinet. Like, I feel like that's...
Well, but that's like, that game came from Japan where arcades still matter. Like, this game is being developed domestically where...
Chicago, son.
No, Japan probably wouldn't care about it, so why put it out?
I can see that, yeah. Anyway, Mortal Kombat's looking really good. It's out April 19th.
Coming up.
Excited for that one. Jack DeVries is our Mortal Kombat expert. He's going to be reviewing that one. It's going to be good. A few quick news updates. The final Mass Effect 2 DLC mission
Arrival.
Is coming out March 29th. I guess it's, same day for 360 PS3 and PC. It's called Arrival. March 29th again, $7 is what that one's going to set you back.
What's it about, Damon?
I don't know. Let's see if
somebody arrives.
Space.
Vander Shepard is sent to rescue an undercover operative who may have information about an imminent Reaper invasion.
What?
Reapers?
Spoilers. A Reaper invasion
in this part of
Earth?
The galaxy?
I know. Right?
I have a noob update, by the way.
Oh, good.
I went to the wiki, and it somehow references
a noob date,
the Vietnam War. But I'm not talking about. I know noob stands for person who is new at something and sucks at it. A newbie. But I'm just wondering if the actual term noob grew out of that because of Noob Saibot.
Right.
And was
he bad? I don't remember him being bad in the game, though. Right. Like, you'd want it to be. If I was going to call Geddes a noob and reference that, I would be like Noob Saibot's like fumbling all over himself.
No, yeah, and I mean noobs. It's like the Noob Saibot is such a good character that only noobs use him because he's so easy to win with. Oh, noob chainsaw like in Gears of War, noob because like it's easy to get kill people with it. I don't know.
It just seems very.
What does it have to do with the Vietnam War?
I didn't read the entire entry. Something about newbies. It had a limited usage amongst U.S. troops in the Vietnam War.
As a
slang term for a new man in the unit.
I thought you were looking up Noob Saibot on the wiki.
Oh, no.
Noob Saibot did fight in Vietnam.
Yeah. He was Robin Williams.
That's the beginning of his story in Mortal Kombat.
Yeah, it would just be funny if Boone's name
Vietnam
backwards
War.
Was. Yeah,
it was frozen in ice where Shang Tsung defrosted him in another dimension.
You've seen Mortal Kombat in 5 minutes?
Yeah, yeah.
Today, Square Enix announced it's canceled Gun Loco.
What did they say about it?
Oh, no.
I love this. They sent out a press release. So, listeners, you know, publishers send out press releases every day. You know, we get press releases about video game news, release dates, game announcements, you know.
They're full of good information.
Yeah, it's true. They're usually, you know, several paragraphs long. They're kind of lengthy. It's like a full page, you know, of information, of stuff to read. It's information about the game, and then they'll talk about whatever news they're announcing.
It says at the bottom, about Square Enix, about whatever yeah. company, about the game, about the developer.
So anyway, Square Enix today sent out a press release announcing it's canceling Gun Loco. So I'm going to read their press release
in its
entirety.
Make a sandwich.
Do we
going to take a while.
Do we have time for that?
Yeah, so just
should I get comfortable. Should I go get a soda?
Get comfortable. Here it is. Here's the headline is, Square Enix ceases development of Gun Loco. The body of the press release reads, Square Enix announced today that it has ceased development of the Xbox 360 game Gun Loco.
You can continue. You have our attention.
I just sat down with my soda. Yeah.
Full stop. That is the entirety of the press release. It's amazing. Maybe the listeners don't understand that. That's actually very unusual for us, but we got a big kick out of that when we saw that today.
If they would have put a bunch of PR gobbledygook that didn't mean anything in there, we wouldn't have even had any more questions.
It's true.
Since they put it in like that, we're all like, "What the heck is going on with this game? What's the story behind that?"
So they announced that last summer, I guess. I think we had a trailer up for it. They just showed people running around. There's like a lot of sliding. People were like sliding around and shooting in an insane asylum. Yeah, I think that's what the game is.
I saw it at TGS.
You saw the game, actually.
Yeah.
Did you play it or see it played? Or?
Uh-uh. I didn't play it myself.
Okay.
Yeah. It was like people were going gun crazy in the game.
Gun Loco.
Yes.
Oh.
Oh.
Oh, I see the connection.
Oh.
Interesting.
Dr. Robinson, what is it? We spill the vial of Agent X. Oh my God, what are the side effects? It's easy. Gun Loco. This montage of people foaming at the mouth.
Was that the start of the Mortal Kombat song?
Well, that's why they canceled it. It was too close to
copyright infringement.
I know it. So sorry if anyone out there was looking forward to playing Gun Loco. Square Enix is canceled. Next up on this week's magical scoop train of magic, Christine Steimer interviews the lead designer of both Dragon Age Origins and Dragon Age 2. Take it away, Christine.
What's up, everyone? Christine here with Mike Laidlaw, the lead designer of both Dragon Age Origins and Dragon Age 2. We're just going to talk to you a little bit about the sequel, which recently came out. I reviewed it, gave it an 8.5, thought it was awesome. But I did think that it was rather bold of you guys to set one entire RPG in one city. I mean, how risky did you think that was going to be when you were designing it?
I think we knew that... We knew that there were certain risks. I mean, and certainly it was creating a change from Origins, which to my mind was always a game about geography, about a country, and about a huge span of space. So, you know, in approaching that, what we decided to do was make sure that we were kind of owning that change. And it certainly doesn't mean that, you know, that's the only thing we'll ever do with Dragon Age, but we wanted to try and make a bunch of things hang together. We knew we were making some changes to combat. We knew that there was some changes around, you know, a single protagonist and not the warden and so on. And we also knew we were changing some elements about the storytelling style. So for us, telling a story that covered a large span of time worked very well with the idea of the frame narrative, which worked very well of the city and the people within the city evolving and changing kind of their roles and rationales, which worked very well with the idea of the art style looking a little more exaggerated, a little more distinct, which worked very well with the idea of the whole game essentially being a story that's being told, and in a lot of ways being spun by a guy who's a little prone to exaggeration. So we kind of tried to look at and hang it all together and you know, thought about, you know, the repercussions of, well, it's a smaller space, but we do have a bigger period of time, and it's the evolution of a story. And when we looked at, you know, have other games done this successfully, we realized that, you know, in a lot of ways, Baldur's Gate 2, while you did move out into, you know, places like the Asylum and so on, a lot of it was really centered in Efkadla, so that gave us a bit of confidence. And as well, you know, the entire Grand Theft Auto series, in a lot of ways, has had a lot of success, and probably its most successful gameplay parts in that more urban environment. So something we knew, you know, was not untried, and something we thought would be an interesting challenge and present a neat kind of framework for us to look at some of the other changes we were doing with the game.
Cool. Grand Theft Auto, an influence, eh? It's a little bit interesting. So I guess I'm wondering, how was your art approach different from Origins? Because I know that, you know, you've totally revamped the Qunari and the elves, and now they actually look like a different race, which is cool. But was there a reason that wasn't done in Origins, or?
Well, I think it was kind of in retrospect, we recognized, and our art director, Matt Goldman, makes a very compelling argument, is that Origins, wasn't sitting in a space where it felt like it had kind of its own alchemy visually. It didn't feel like it had a recipe that we were following. And so Matt sat down with the art team and worked with the concept artist and wanted to create two things. He wanted to create a visual style that you could sort of break down into having component pieces, having some reference material that the art team could go to for inspiration and for ideas. And in his case, it was the very bold choice of Peter Bruegel meets Akira Kurosawa. So he went to both film direction, which he felt was important given that we have a very, you know, moving and visual medium, but also to the more planar picture-making styles of Bruegel, who's most famous for The Triumph of Death, which is, if you look it up, it'll be a picture almost everyone recognizes. So Matt wanted to kind of get together with an alchemy, get together with an idea of artists and works who were very good at focusing on the character and the character struggles within an environment. And then beyond that, he really wanted to create a distinct visual space for Dragon Age, something that by his impression, Dragon Age Origins was a very good fantasy game, but it didn't necessarily stand out in any clear direction as having some uniquely Dragon Age elements. And what I think we see is especially as it's evolved and it's been, you know, rendered in different ways, and we've improved and kind of refined our lighting over the course of working on the game, we've started to see that character come forward, and to the point where we feel like we can now advance and have people glance at a screenshot and go, that's a Dragon Age game. I can tell just because of the visual style that it's presenting, as opposed to it's some sort of fantasy game.
Right. Is there, I don't know if you can even talk about this, but it does seem like Dragon Age 2 was a much shorter dev cycle than is normal, especially for a game of that size. Was there a particular reason for that? Or, I mean, it just seems like you guys totally improved a lot of aspects of the game, like combat, the art style, all these things. But then it did sort of mean that other areas had to take a hit, like dungeons and exploration and all of that.
It was a challenging dev cycle. It was shorter than Origins, for sure, though. I mean, Origins was pushing around 6 years. But it was one that we felt was reasonable, given that there was a lot of overlap time in when content teams like design and art were actually complete on Origins, completely done and actually locked technically out of the pool, as it were. And we had opportunities to start doing a lot of the overhauls, redesigning combat, and the visuals, while we were doing a lot of the work on the console versions of Origins, which was almost entirely a programmer effort. Obviously, we supported at times, but, you know, it's really about the programming at that point. So we started into DA2 and certainly some of the visual work very early, you know, well before Origins shipped. And then we proceeded forward for DA2 and just, you know, rolled programming back in, largely with lessons learned from having worked on the console, so that we could simultaneously work on all three platforms and make sure we were kind of playing to the strengths of each one.
Yeah, so, I mean, but do you think that, you know, taking something out like exploration, dungeons, I mean, a lot of them were essentially the same. Do you think that hurt the game? I mean, what was the choice, I guess, behind that?
I think that repetition in dungeons was probably one of the weakest parts of the game, and it's a fair criticism and one that we absolutely intend to address. We can do so both through downloadable content and, you know, future kind of additions into the game, but also just long term, kind of philosophically, it's something that we're aware of and we understand is a problem. With it, though, I mean, what it kind of boiled down to is, you know, at the end of the day, we realized that, you know, we actually had opportunity for more content than we had spaces kind of brought up to the final state, and it really boiled down to, well, do we start slashing out content, or do we accept that, you know, it's not ideal that this is a repeated cave that I've seen before, and so on. So in our end, you know, especially following a game of the scope of Origins, we realized that it would probably be better to add and keep, you know, more of those side stories, more of those optional quests, than it would be to just start slashing them over, you know, the fact that a cave is repeating.
Right. I mean, I personally agree with that, but I know that there's a lot of people out there who don't really like, you know, going into a cave and having it be the exact same thing.
Well, I think that's a fair complaint, and like I said, it's one we're aware of, certainly, and we'll continue to address as we proceed with the franchise. I think it's something that, you know, it's obviously got a level of sensitivity to it, and so be it. Absolutely.
Cool. So another one of the things that you guys added, it's everybody's saying, oh, they took it from Mass Effect, which you did, but the conversation wheel, which I enjoyed. But do you think that limits at all what you can do with a game? Like, for example, could you have done that with Origins, even though there's so many different stories going on there?
Oh, absolutely. Origins, in fact, went through a period where it had a functional conversation wheel almost identical to what we have here, including the icons. And we, you know, took a look at kind of what it does. It does a couple things. It actually allows us to technically have more conversation options on screen at any given time than we had in Origins. We can actually have, you know, say 5 investigates and 3 responses, whereas in Origins we were actually limited to 6, you know, as opposed to 8 or a theoretical maximum of 10. So it doesn't in any way, I think, really hamper what we're doing in terms of telling stories. It creates a different, I guess, methodology or a different method of delivery of the story content. But, you know, what I found with you know, most people's playthroughs is playing through, they understand, okay, there are certain tones of response, but also lots of chances to ask questions, a lot of cool little side things like, oh, clearly being able to tell that I'm going to pass the baton to Aveline because it's a corrupt guard and she's in a particularly good spot to deal with that, and so on. So it gave us as many opportunities as it gave us restrictions, and really, I think in the end, it worked out to be as deep or as open in terms of what we could do while still delivering something that I felt had a much better cadence in terms of the back and forth, your character being able to not just, you know, deliver a wry line in your head, but also being able to actually deliver it and have people react accordingly.
Totally. I love that as well. And I also really like what you guys said with the companions and, you know, having Varric step up and tell some crazy story, even though that's not at all true. He actually convinced me a couple times. I was like, wait, what is that? Is that really the secret Viscount's son? What's going on? But so you said that you had that thing in that had the conversation wheel in Origins. Was there a reason it was taken out? Did you just not have time for voice actors or?
Sure, sure. Actually, we in the end of the day, we took a look at how it was going to work, and really the conversation wheel in and of itself is fundamentally a feature that ties to player voiceover, and we, you know, took a look at what it would take to put it in and current development cycles and so on, and we realized that, you know, we wanted to have basically an approach that said, you know what, let's go with the conversation list. It works very well. Putting the wheel in just with text is reasonably awkward because it really, to me, the benefit of the wheel, as I see it, is that it presents you with essentially a hidden door. You have 3 options. Behind those options is what your character will say and deliver in voiceover, which you haven't read, you haven't just heard it in your head and then heard it played in the game, which we, in our testing, have found leads to people almost instantly skipping. If they read it, then they see it, and, mm-hmm. and it gets played out again. It's because in your head, you've already played it. Right. So we tend to think of it as something that's like a reward, where, you know, your choices now have a hidden kind of element behind each and every one of them. So we looked at that and thought, you know, this is something that we didn't want to pursue for Origins, but for DA2, you know, recognizing a lot of the feedback and certainly our own experience with things like the Landsmeet, which were big political moments, and your character feeling mute, we realized it was a step that we wanted to take for DA2.
Cool. Dragon Age 2 obviously does have some influences from Mass Effect, not just the conversation system, but also the way that party members are now sort of restricted in their armor choices. So what was the reasoning behind sort of adopting those sort features from that series?
Well, I think really that's a feature that's kind of, it's independent of whether it's Mass or not. It's simply just a feature. And something that we looked at from, you know, okay, so we wanted to make sure we kept some customization, certainly, you know, being able to put on a fire resist amulet and so on, or mm-hmm. enchantment before you go into battle against the dragon is pretty fundamental. I've always seen, you know, Dragon Age is a game about preparation as much as it is about execution of your plan once you get into battle. But for the characters, what we wanted to do for 2, especially given that characters like Aveline kind of evolve and change over time, some of the romantic characters evolve and change, Anders has his own very distinct story arc, we wanted to give them their own visuals and their own personality that were kind of told through those visuals, rather than everybody ending up in similar-looking armor that you'd equipped.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in retrospect, and just as we look at it going forward, this is probably something we'll end up revisiting. I think that some level of visual customization is still very, very important. Yet at the same time, I don't want to move back to, okay, well, everybody's in identical leather armor. So I think
right.
what we'll probably find over the future is there's a middle ground that balances between them keeping their character, you know, Morrigan looking like, you know, Morrigan in her robes, but still having changes based on the way that you've been choosing to equip them and so on. And I think, you know, the weapons goes part of the way to that, story progression goes part of the way to that. And I think in the future it may be something we want to go deeper on, but we'll continue to evaluate just as we proceed.
Something I liked about it, actually, was just the fact that I felt a little freer in being able to change up my party, because I didn't have to worry about the fact that this guy still had, you know, maybe level one armor or something, and crap, now I have to go find him something better so that I can use him in my party and he won't die immediately. So, I mean, I think there is something to that as well.
Yeah, it's got pluses, it's got minuses, and I think that it's something that I want to continue to explore with the systems team and with the art team, to try and find a really good balance between not getting stuck at your camp micromanaging, but also not feeling like the characters aren't evolving as much as they could be. And I think that, you know, when I see the negative reactions, for the most part, they aren't usually, I can't put her in generic leather armor, it's that she doesn't change enough, you know, or certain character and complaint here. And that's usually what I see. And I think that's just something we'll continue to iterate with over time. I like the step it made. I do think that we can do that step with more grace, though.
So, romances. One of my favorite parts about BioWare games. I was just a little confused as to why they were so tame this time around. I was, because, you know, I just played Origins right before I played Dragon Age 2 again. And I was like, oh yeah, this is probably the most naked I've seen a character in a while. And then getting to Dragon Age 2, where we just make out on the bed, I was like, oh, I at least want Anders without his shirt on.
Right. Well, we did take a look at, honestly, reaction to the Dragon Age romances, and while, you know, they I think that the stories that were being told and everything were resonating really well, there were, I would call it, mixed reactions to the actual scenes themselves. Some people felt they went too far. Some people felt they went not far enough. Some people felt they were awkward. Some people felt they were really sweet. It ranged all over the place. And whenever I see anything that ranges kind of wildly, what it suggests to me is that there's certainly elements worth keeping here. We certainly don't want to do away with cutscenes or whatever, but we may want to try a new direction to see if we can, you know, test and figure the waters. So in our case, the goal was to go for something that was more sexy than sex, something that you know, brought some passion to the table, that, you know, for a character or player who'd invested the time and energy into, you know, bringing these romances up, especially the rivalry ones, which create a really interesting and unique experience. We did want them to have an element of passion and an element of kind of tension to them without necessarily having to dwell on it. So it was a different approach this time around, and one that, you know, again, like virtually everything, we're going to go back and continue to evaluate as we do. Is it too far? Is it not far enough? And, you know, we'll continue to evolve as we go.
I'm a little sad, I must say, that I will never get to have a three-way now, because I accidentally killed Zevran in Origins.
That is a shame.
He's like
a catalyst for sexy times.
I know, but it was funny. I didn't even realize that what I was doing at the time. It was like in Denerim, and the crows came over and were like, we found you. And I was like, oh. And I think I chose an option that was like, well, fine, I'll just kill you all. And I didn't realize in my head at first that also meant Zevran. And then I was like, oh,
well,
damn it.
It's a reasonable response to people trying to kill you, really.
Yeah. So something that, well, it's no secret to me anyway, that I hate Meryl, sorry, but she's just, she got on my nerves eventually, obviously, after seeing her storyline. At first I thought I'd really like her, and then I started to learn about what her deal was, and now I cannot stand her. But do you think you'll ever try and maybe go more Fallout route, where you can kill people that you don't like?
Well, I think it's, I think... Maybe there's some balance to be done between, you know, I can kill anyone or anyone. I guess Fallout has that to a degree. There's certain characters that are kind of plot critical that get back up. And I think it's really valid style of gameplay. It's one that we tend to shy away from simply because of the way our combat mechanics work in terms of evaluating hostiles versus friendlies and so on. But that said, I think that it would be very, very possible, and certainly well within our means to create, you know, situations where you end up at odds with certain characters. And I mean, even at the end of DA2, there are points where you, depending on how you've interacted with your party, may end up going toe to toe with them.
Yeah, I had that happen too.
It's doable. I mean, the balance between story and, you know, can I just do it randomly? is something we have to be careful of, because, you know, you never know about the person who accidentally kills someone really vital or so on. So you have to be careful about how you deploy that. But it's doable and something that I think we'd do if we felt it made the story stronger, for sure.
Yeah. Do you think that, I mean, BioWare, a lot of your games tie together from game to game, whereas I don't think Fallout does, you know, Fallout is very standalone. So do you think that that sort of limits you in what you can do as well? Because then you've got to think about, you know, oh, crap, okay, well, this person could be dead or whatever going on into the next game.
It's as much a limitation as it is a challenge, I think. It's one of those things where we can absolutely do it so long as we're aware of, you know, what that involves in the future. If this character is going to come back or could come back in a future title or piece of DLC or what have you, but they could be dead. We now have to enter into a contract with ourselves to do that justice, to try and, you know, bring in reactivity or an alternate character. So, you know, the Mass Effect example would be, you know, whether Rex is on the throne in T'Chanka or, mm-hmm. you know, it's his brood brother. So that kind of thing is doable and something that you just enter into with, you know, with your eyes open. It doesn't, by no means is it impossible, but it's, you know, it can either result in a bit of extra work or you to, you know, do a bit of, I guess, adjustment in terms of what your expectations for that character returning, what role might they return in, and how major is it, and so on.
Cool. Well, I love the game, I have to say. I keep replaying it. I can't stop myself. but that said, I think we are out of time, unfortunately. But thank you very much for chatting with us and letting us know.
Thanks for having me.
All your thoughts. Great. All right. We will be back later. Okie dokie.
Let's check in with those listeners.
Hey, listeners.
Of ours. This is Eugene Soruta, our listener from Japan, who sent us those t-shirts.
Oh, yes.
Good friend of ours. He says, hello, GameScoop crew. Just writing in to say thanks for holding the charity marathon with your Australia site. Since I live in Tokyo, I was lucky enough that the only discomfort to experience was a blackout. Many were not as fortunate, and my thoughts go out for them. We are told the power supply has decreased quite a bit, and we have to cut back on using electronics for a couple months. This event has really opened my eyes as to how fragile our day-to-day lives are, and that I can help too by simply donating what I can. And I don't mean just towards the earthquake last week, as disasters occur all the time, everywhere. Surely I'm not the only one here in Japan to feel grateful for all the relief efforts, financial aid, and warm wishes from around the world. You guys and gals truly are something. So as we say, here in the country where t-shirts are small and 30 seconds of pornography is proudly provided, arigato.
Oh, that's nice.
Doitoshimashite, Eugene.
Thanks for wasting your country's power to write that email and download this podcast. You should be ashamed of yourself, Eugene.
This is Jonathan, or Viva La J-Max on my IGN. Wanted to say thanks again for an awesome PAX East panel. My question for you guys is, what is your favorite or most memorable running joke on GameScoop? Anything from Micah's beard to ass to ass to Solius to Floridor, etc. For me, I'd have to say it was Rob the Robot. Back in the day, the amazing technology of listener call-ins. Almost every appearance of Rob was funny enough that I couldn't listen in public for fear of looking like an idiot. Anyway, just wondering what your choices are.
That's a tough one.
Does this include Knocking Boots, an extension of the
sure.
GameScoop podcast?
Sure, why not?
A modern favorite of mine yeah. is the boat landing reference.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I find it hilarious.
Knocking Boots down the boat landing?
Yeah. You can use it in almost any situation.
Can anyone explain that, or is it a secret? Do you have to know?
Maybe
I don't
we should keep it as an in joke. Should we keep it an in joke, or should we explain it?
It doesn't matter. Some kid wanted to rail this girl down at the boat landing. So
in this kid's town, that's where like the makeout spot was, down at the boat landing.
The boat landing. So.
And then that just became the thing, yeah.
And I can't remember if we're even saying that right. Cause
no, because it was the boat launching.
It was the boat launch?
No, I think it was the boat landing.
Many listeners have written in to say that it's much like Floridor.
I don't remember.
It really? Spiraled into this something that it never was, but that's just what we all remember it as.
I don't remember what it was originally, actually. One of my favorite in-jokes is one that I coined, actually. It's the Raging Canadian, the nickname for Charles Agnette here.
I don't do a lot of raging, I think.
No, you don't.
I feel like you're raging inside. There's a lot of turmoil happening within Charles Agnette.
That's true.
That's why I drink a lot of water, just to keep everything settled.
Mm-hmm. I enjoy Solius, of course. Who doesn't love Solius? Maybe
his floppy arms.
Maybe the banging on a mailbox thing.
Yeah.
If you bang a girl on a mailbox, she's federally protected, so the dad can't get mad at you.
Yeah, but it's a way to assert dominance over a woman's father.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. It's like stepping onto like the U.S. Embassy soil in a foreign country.
Yeah, all he could do is he can just shake his fist from the porch.
He can step right outside and yell.
Yeah, that's the rule. That was before we had knocking boots.
Yeah.
So that was just a crazy aside.
That's true, yeah.
Oh, he already did. Sorry.
Rob. Anything on your end, Charles?
I was just going to say Solius. I missed that
Solius
guy.
Is
Solius is really good.
He's great.
We should pull out him.
He's on a fact-finding mission right now for the U.N.
Where is he right now, honestly?
What's up?
Where is he? Is he over in the video area? We should bring him up here. We got all this room now.
It's in the game library.
I'm pretty sure I lean my bicycle against him.
Charles.
Why do you keep doing this?
They took my insides out. Where is my coolant?
My coolant.
I have a question.
Yeah.
I don't know if an email is going to cover this, but did you guys see the Battlefield 3 footage that keeps coming out?
That keeps coming out?
It's amazing.
Is it new footage or the one that we saw at the announcement?
No, there's more. There's been more.
Because I saw the rocket launcher to the sniper's face.
Okay, yeah. That was the most recent footage.
Okay, yeah. I love that, yeah.
Game looks pretty.
Yeah.
That game looks amazing. I can't wait for that game.
Call of Duty Killer, Charles?
I don't know about sales. I mean, I'm not sure. And I mean, I'll have to see the multiplayer component before, like, I can be, like, as excited as I want to be about that game.
Well, and speaking of multiplayer, if you're playing Battlefield 3 when it comes out in multiplayer, and you see a group of people on your team rush the jets and take off in the jets and do nothing but fly around the map for the entire match, then it's probably me, Charles, and somebody else from IGN.
Yes, I need to figure out how to do loops in the jets. And once that's possible, then that's all that's going to happen. In addition to missiles and bombs to help out the team. But yes, fancy flying all over the map. But yeah, I think that game looks amazing. And
question.
Yeah.
Homefront killer.
I'm assuming it will do better than Homefront.
Oh, 300,000 units in the first day, Charles?
Yeah, like that. Yeah, I think Battlefield's definitely going to do better than that. I think Battlefield's going to take a much larger like share of sort of public consciousness. This time around, but I mean, Black Ops has sold like 80 gazillion copies.
That's what I was gonna say.
Copies.
The success of Black Ops is just mind blowing.
Yeah,
it?
It's like
1 in 8, right?
Yeah, 1 in 8 homes have a copy of Black Ops in it. Is there any way Activision could match that success or top it this year? Like it's phenomenal, isn't it?
I feel like this is the year that has to start going down.
Right, the bubble pops.
I think that's it.
How can it keep getting bigger? It's amazing.
Yeah, I think this is critical mass for Call of Duty. Of course, I mean, maybe I'll be completely wrong. It'll sell 80 gabillion copies this time.
Well,
but
the thing is we kept saying the same thing about the Wii, right? When the Wii kept selling and selling and selling and selling, we kept on going, well, this thing has peaked by now.
That's
and
right,
it
gonna
just
end here.
Kept going up. I mean,
but of course, it has peaked now.
So, yes,
I mean, there is an end.
There
at
is,
some point.
There is for sure. But when we were saying it's got to be it. It wasn't. So, yeah.
But is it the same thing? I mean, the Wii is always the Wii. No. Every game has something new.
Yeah, but I mean, Activision sees Call of Duty as a platform now. And yeah. I think that they're going to just keep reinforcing that. But however, we saw what they did with Guitar Hero. So, I mean, when is the Guitar Hero effect going to happen to Call of Duty? I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, it'll get tossed aside eventually. I think before that happens, they have to try an online option for it. Like, they have to try an online microtransaction.
That's what I was going to say. When do they announce that?
The real win for them, I think, is when they do that and it all ties together. When you can do stuff in the free-to-play game that ties into the console game, that ties into whatever else they have, and it all becomes just one giant kraken of death that just overtakes everything. Mm. Damon looks really scared right now.
I know.
Is Liam Neeson going to be involved in that?
Release the kraken!
His awesomely shiny armor.
Never saw that one.
Yeah, did anyone actually see that movie?
I have seen that. I've watched it in about 15-minute chunks because it kept showing up on HBO, and it's not a good movie. It has really pretty effects, but it's pretty bad.
So you mentioned Homefront and how good its sales were.
Yeah.
You mentioned Battlefield and how much better it's going to do.
I think so. I mean, but, I think it'll do better
than
Homefront.
But
I can't imagine it'll do as well as Call of Duty this year.
How much did Battlefield cost to make as opposed to Homefront? Like Homefront, as you look at the game, you can see that it probably cost a fraction of what Battlefield 3 is going to cost to make.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, who wins?
They still
right?
put a lot of money into it, though, right?
Homefront marketing.
Colin's always saying that he said on Beyond yesterday that somewhere along the line, they've admitted that they'd have to sell 2 million copies or something to break even on that game.
First of all,
make money on that game or something.
Wow. I can't believe they would admit that publicly. That sounds surprising to me.
Well, I mean, they're a public company, so I mean, there might have been some shareholder thing that they had to talk about that with, but I don't know. It is rare. We don't hear that kind of stuff very often. But, I mean, I don't know. I mean, if they sold 300,000 at launch, not looking very good.
I know. I feel like that's kind of like – that's what they sold – that's what their marketing sold for them. But yeah. Now that the reviews are out and word of mouth is going to get around, yeah. Like, I don't – it's not going to pick up, you know?
Yeah. Ouch.
Fun game, though.
Yeah.
I liked Homefront.
Greg, Dave Rooney is from Dublin.
Okay.
And he thought you might want to know how to say ass to ass in Irish.
Love it.
Hone go hone.
No way.
Yeah.
Hone go hone. Rolls off the tongue. Sounds like home go home. What does that mean? Nothing.
Something you'd say to a lassie or something?
Wow, that's creepy. What I thought of too was a dog, like a little puppy. I don't know.
Listeners would like to hear you say it with gusto. So if you were really going to say ass to ass in...
Home go hone!
Doesn't really have the same... sort of effect, does it?
We should go get the Irish
dub. I'm terrified right now.
We should go get the Irish dub of Requiem for a Dream and see if that's in there.
Irish dub.
I can't do a good Irish accent. I wish I could.
Okay. This is Brent Gosh.
That's a good name, too.
Says, hey, just want to let you guys know I've officially gotten the puppy versions. Oh, this is the guy who has puppies, the Hatfield and Miller puppies.
All right.
Yeah, he named his puppies Hatfield and Miller. Hatfield's the girl.
Wow. Hatfield and Miller sounds like a Broadway, you know, lyrics and
yeah,
music team.
It does, yeah. Well, we kind of do that because I provide the beats for Greg Miller to sing over.
Yeah. I didn't bring in a pack.
I know. I thought about doing it just now, but you're
I'm sorry. At PAX, there was so much going on. I guess I just kind of – I gave a cautionary tale of bears eating people and Damon wasn't happy with
that. So anyway, Brent's here with a pup date.
Oh, wow.
It's good, right? So he says, I've officially gotten the puppy versions of you, all of their shots, and their first collars. Miller has learned how to scratch the back door when he wants to pee.
Aww.
But Hatfield refuses to accept that the entire house is not her toilet. She's also very greedy and steals Miller's food. I'm thinking she's going to be the dominant partner if they ever breed. Right? Just like in real life.
Yeah, right.
I wear the pants in this relationship.
I wear the pants.
Oh, man.
Remember that Avril Lavigne song? Everybody go YouTube that one.
Can we listen to that one later today?
Sure.
In the office?
Sure.
Be nice
but then we gotta listen to Friday again.
Friday.
I don't want to listen to Friday.
Getting fucked on Friday.
Kenneth, 15, Greg.
I'm singing it though, so okay. I'm allowed.
Kenneth Botley says, "This is Kenneth Botley again. Have we heard from him before?
I don't Apparently.
Know. Two quick questions. I'm sure y'all have answered this one before, but how does the listener become a super fan?
You write in a lot. You are active
you
on my IGNs.
You do something extraordinary.
You do something crazy. Devin Sneathen flies everywhere.
He flies
no matter
wherever
what's happening.
We are.
Yeah,
wherever we are, Devin Sneathen flies there to see us.
Now he can do that for free, so good for him.
But. Yeah, but I'm just saying that's... Yeah.
Well, I know. Matt Jones, what did Matt Jones do?
Matt Jones' license plate says Scoop.
There you go.
What? I didn't know that.
Yeah, his that's license awesome. Plate says Scoop.
I don't think anyone
hardcore.
Has... Matt Jones was the first superfan.
He's the
right?
overlord of the superfans.
Yeah. No one's even come close
to
him.
Yeah, no one can.
For a while, there was debate that Devin could possibly be in the running.
Yeah, Devin has given Matt a run for his money. Excuse
he
me.
He brings us presents.
It's true. Yeah.
People come from the UK and give us presents.
Yeah. Presents certainly don't hurt. his second question is, I'm thinking of starting my own game review blog. How does the IGN crew go about deciding how much to mark a game off for flaws? By that, I mean, Colin Moriarty took half a point off of Mass Effect 2 on PS3 just because it was a year late. Jack just took off a point we're going to clarify. Just let him finish. Jack took off a point from Pokemon for being formulaic and having ugly Pokemon. Whoever reviewed Killzone 3 took off an entire point and a half for lackluster story. The question again is, how does the IGN crew go about deciding how much to mark a game off for flaws? You're approaching this the wrong way. You're misunderstanding the way we do our reviews. It's not like every game starts out as a 10 and you start taking off points for flaws. That's not how it works.
Yeah, you play it and you sit down and then you think about it.
Yeah.
How much fun did I have? How did it look? How did this go?
Yeah.
Colin didn't mark down Mass Effect 2 either. I mean,
he didn't mark it down because it was a year late.
Yeah. Not a half a point either. It was 0.1. So, but the problem there was that it came out.
He's thinking it from a 10. Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah. That's not how it works, though.
No.
No, I mean, that's not how I would approach the review process. It's like Greg said, you play the game, and then you sort of, it's not like, oh, well, how many points do I have to deduct for these you know, this list of problems that I had. It's just sort of like, what did I feel that game
was? Yeah, what's the overall experience at the end of it?
Yeah, it's not like a scientific. There's no like procedure thing that you go through aside from, you know.
It's very subjective.
Yeah.
Geddes has nothing to say about this.
He doesn't review games anymore. He's washed up.
He's got
a calendar to maintain.
Thinking about how you also you're reviewing the game based on what else is on the platform at the time, you know.
Isn't that genre?
Yeah, it's not not reviewing Mass Effect 2 in the same sphere as you're reviewing Mario Kart Wii. Mm. You know, you're thinking about what else is on PlayStation 3 right now and what can I compare it to? You know, that's why if you're looking at, oh, it's a year late. Well, if it would have come out at the same time that it came out on 360, it would be a very different experience than it is right now. So that was what I was thinking about.
Daniel Pryor has 4 questions.
Greedy.
Number
Pick
1.
Two.
Greed much, Daniel Pryor? It's question 4. This I'd like to ask more questions.
Don't become a super fan. You got stuff to do.
Number 1. Which do you all prefer? Fantasy or sci-fi?
Sci-fi.
I can't. It's like picking between my two favorite children. I can't.
It's tough,
do that.
Isn't it? But if I had to pick one, I guess sci-fi.
No, you can't pick one.
No?
That's what you just said. That was a question.
You're not playing along.
I'm just saying I like them both equally. It's like I'm just as excited as for Skyrim as I am for Mass Effect 3. Why do I have to pick which
genre?
This is like
when you do the hypotheticals and you're like, you can either have sex with this girl or you can do this. And you go, well, I don't want to do both those things. So, I mean, I'm not going to choose. What if you hold me to this one day?
You're
talking about, you idiot.
Let me ask you this. Are you writing an internet sci-fi novel or an internet fantasy novel?
It's more sci-fi than it is fantasy.
So there's no orcs or trolls in it?
No, there's no orcs or trolls in it. But I am equally interested in writing something fantasy. Mm-hmm. So if I have to choose one sci-fi, fine.
I feel like a lot of sci-fi is just fantasy, just in space.
Different setting.
Because,
100%.
I mean, it you have to draw the line
not
between...
Not always space.
Okay. Or on
think about like cyberpunk. On, like, that's on, not space, necessarily.
No, that's true. I feel like a lot of it is just fantasy, just set in the future, maybe, if you want to say it like that, or...
Well, it depends on what we mean by fantasy.
Or some high-tech,
does
like,
it have
area?
To have high elves?
Yeah, is it, like,
fantasy?
High fantasy, or is it sci-fi like Rendezvous with Rama, which is, like, very almost technical, that's like,
true.
Sci-fi, which is, like, you know, if this were to happen, here's how it would theoretically work, and there's, like, you know, not... It's not, like, scientifically sound or anything, but, like, there was some research done and a lot of thought put into how things would actually work instead of just saying, and they had laser guns and they shot energy, I don't know,
beams.
Mutons or something.
energy mutons?
Well, that's
mutons.
The thing. I mean, you just,
I'm stealing that.
A lot of the, like, quote-unquote sci-fi is just people making stuff up that has to do with pretty lights and people with stupid haircuts, and it's like...
That's all Ryan's doing with his novel.
Yes,
just making stuff up.
That was my starting point, and
like,
then I worked backward from there.
There was a guy.
Jax put up his 14-foot pink mohawk. It looks like space just got crowded.
With space mutons.
Yeah.
I actually reading Cryptum, which is the Greg Bear sci-fi novel that's set in the Halo universe right now, and it's really good. If you're a Halo fan and a science fiction fan, I highly recommend it, because there's some things in there that, like, really, you know, shed light on some of the secrets in the Halo universe. But without giving too much away, what Charles is saying does make sense, because there are characters in that book that are kind of, if you really break it down, they're essentially space elves. They're like, what are elves, right? They're usually, like, really wise. They live a long time. They have, like...
They have high agility.
Yes. They're not space rogues. They're elves.
They have some sort of magical, mystical aptitude.
Yeah. But now that I've said that there are space elves in the Halo book, no one is going to want to go read that book. So don't pay any attention to anything.
I actually just pre-ordered that book when you said that. I don't know if I can pre-order something that's already out, but...
You can.
I did it.
Question number 2.
Oh, God.
It's a good question so far.
Who is your favorite developer?
Company or person?
Your choice. I'd have to... Probably Valve.
I'm going to go with BioWare.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Also a good choice.
Yeah, I'm debating between, like, Valve and Blizzard.
Yeah.
And I mean, I know a lot of Blizzard's games are, you know, they... Like, StarCraft 2 is very similar to StarCraft in a lot of ways.
Yeah, but it's just like...
But every game that they've made, I've just been, like, the biggest fan of possible. Yeah. Like, those are, like, my favorite games. But, I mean, same deal with Valve. Like, they've never put out a game I didn't like.
Yeah, I'd actually have to be a toss-up between Bungie and BioWare for me, probably. Gregory?
I would say either Naughty Dog, because I was a big Jack and Daxter fan, and then obviously Uncharted is really good, or Rockstar. With the exception of State of Emergency, I like pretty much everything they do.
Greg reminded me of State of Emergency last week.
I'll never forget the totally EGM cover. When they had that giant EGM cover, and I was that kid, I'm like, whoa, I knew a rocks. And then like, you're running through, you got hatchets in this mall. I'm like, it's going to be red.
That was after Grand Theft Auto 3. Yeah.
Yeah, that was our follow-up to Grand Theft Auto 3.
That's crazy that it was.
I totally forgot about that game.
That was the timeline.
Then what did they do after that?
They went back to Grand Theft Auto.
Huh. Well, no. Well, you had other games in there, too.
Nope.
Did Vice City next?
Well, they had Midnight Club.
Oh, yeah. Right. I don't count the racing.
They had Bully.
Well, Bully was later, though.
Right. But Bully 2 came out.
Later. I'm saying, like, Vice City and stuff came out before that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. There was a Bully 2.
Really?
Yeah. I never played either one.
Weird. Bully 1's great. Bully's an awesome game.
We're going to skip to the fourth question here. It's for Greg.
Really? There was a Bully 2? We're sure on this? What happened in Bully 2?
Nobody played it. We don't know.
Charles, what about that iPhone? You figured out.
Are we thinking that the Bully came to Wii?
No.
There was a scholarship edition
on 360
release that I think had some additional content, but it wasn't a sequel.
Well, I remember Hillary reviewing a Bully game like 2 years ago.
Yeah, on 360. It was when it came back to 360.
Okay.
I'm pretty sure there was no Bully 2, I'm pretty sure. I'm willing to bet things.
Charles
on
is Googling
this.
Madly.
Anyway, sorry. Question number four.
I wish to get deeper into comics.
Okay.
Daniel says, I've only dabbled. Can you recommend any good series, either just starting or that I can get a back catalog of on the iPad? And what is the app to get comics?
Oh, you want to get Comixology is the app. Yeah. Comixology is the framework behind DC's app and Marvel's app and images in Comixology. If you just get the Comixology app, though, you get one username, and it would apply to all your other ones too. But if you use
that, free?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And then you download it. They have a bunch of free stuff to try, too. If he's looking for superheroes on Comixology, I would suggest Invincible. It's a Robert Kirkman book. I'm a big Robert Kirkman fan. And they have all the trade paperbacks on there that'll catch you – or not all of them. They should have most of them. And then back issues that should be able to catch you up. This is one of my biggest excitements about getting an iPad is being able to get comics and get them, especially the Kirkman ones, day and date. Walking Dead as well, the same thing.
You're still iPad 2-less.
I am still iPad 2-less. They are incredibly hard to find, and that makes
apparently sense. If you order online, you still have to wait like a month.
Yeah, exactly. And like, I have another plane trip coming up in April to go do this We're Alive thing down at the Nerdist, a live reading of that plug, sorry. And I want it for that, and now it's like, even if I order it offline, I don't think I'm going to get it in time to be on that plane reading comics, which is BS. So anyways, Comixology, and get anything by Robert Kirkman. You can get back issues there. Superhero, get Invincible, because it's all there. You can get, you read the entire series. Walking Dead is amazing, too, I think. How far are you now? Have you?
I haven't gone back to it.
Okay.
So I should have taken it to Boston with me. I didn't think about that. Before Daniel bounces, he wants to give us some Aussie slang for our enjoyment.
How do I say ass to ass there?
He doesn't say.
But homing, he says, go homing.
They say shout. Wait, shout means paying for your mates who will then shout you back. For example, two friends go into a bar. First man shouts second man and buys his beer.
What does he say? Shout.
He says, I'll shout you.
I'll shout you.
Oh, yeah, that means he's like, he'll get your beer.
Okay.
So cover.
Yeah, exactly. They say shout.
Don't ruin this for that country, Charles.
I'm sorry.
And they also say bugger.
Bugger.
Bugger. That means shit, basically. So.
Take a mean bugger.
You little bugger. Isn't that a bugger? Or as an exclamation, like, bugger, I got to go back home to get the keys.
I woke up with all
shit.
This bugger in my mouth. Who bugged in my mouth? If I had a nickel.
Sounds terrible.
You ought to live this life, Charles.
This is Rick Van Etten. Questions for Damon. It says, I know you have a bad astigmatism in your left eye. For that reason, you can't see the 3D effect on the Nintendo 3DS. I have a bad astigmatism in my right eye. My question is, how bad is your astigmatism? Mine is minus 2.5 in my right eye, minus 0.75 in my left. I believe that's quite bad. Oh, Rick. Mine is so much worse than yours. Mine is like four times worse as yours. My right eye is minus 8, and my left eye is minus 9. So
it's like over 9,000.
I know, right?
That's pretty much Vegeta screaming at all times.
Rick says, I watched Avatar when it came out. I had no problems watching that. The 3D effect was beautiful with my current glasses. So, yeah, I don't think you – it doesn't sound like you'll have a problem with the 3DS. It's just me and the other 11% of the population whose eyesight is as bad as
– Damon went and saw Avatar, just stood up and screamed the whole time.
No, I saw Avatar in 2D, and I was just like, eh.
It was just you and, like, Helen Keller in there?
Oh, great.
What? What is – what?
Where did that
She's
come
a real
from?
Person.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
I'm pretty sure she was blind. I've only picked up on Family Guy references. I'm not 100% sure she knew binary code.
What?
This is from the freaking Puerto Rican.
A nice name. Raging Canadian versus freaking Puerto Rican.
I know, right? I want to see that grudge match. You do have a grudge with the freaking Puerto Rican, don't you, Charles?
Oh, big time, but I don't want to... We can't talk about it right now. Okay, it's illegal.
Freaking Puerto Rican says, over the last year or so of listening to various podcasts, I've noticed that Greg Ass-to-Ass Miller is not the biggest fan of the FPS genre.
Yeah.
I can relate
to... But enjoyed Homefront quite a bit.
Quite a bit, really?
Quite a bit, yeah. I, the story was really good. It's one of those... I agree with the Colin review. It's a very, very short campaign. Mm. Probably not worth the money at full price, but I enjoyed the story.
He says, I can relate to not enjoying certain genres. I don't enjoy playing most racing or sports games. My question to you guys are, what are some genres of a game that you don't usually enjoy playing, and what is one game that that broke this rule? Just like you, freaking Puerto Rican, I am not a big sport or racing games fan, but I loved Hot Pursuit, for instance.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah, if they can do, and I love the Burnout series. Like, if they do something a little different, if they allow me to do something a little bit more than just race a car, I can get, I really get into it.
How many, well, sports games for me. I mean, I don't play sports games.
But then what game
but is there an exact
broke that rule for you?
NBA Jam?
Wii Sports.
Okay.
Like, that's the closest thing I can think of because I don't play any others.
Yeah. Greg already said Homefront is
It's a good one. Racing, I'm not a big fan of, but, like, I love kart racing. So there's, like, a knockoff there. If you want straight racing, I I'm excited for MotorStorm Apocalypse. I've been able to play that a few times.
Just delayed in the U.S. now.
Yep.
To when? Do it
indefinitely.
Indefinitely,
yeah,
wow.
It's right in line with the UK thing. It's just, you know, nothing's wrong with the game. It's just that
just
the whole
idea.
Point of the game is that you're driving through an earthquake-stricken thing as a bunch of horrible natural disasters happen.
Yeah.
So, not the kind of climate you want to release in right now.
I mean, I guess for me, would be modern sports games as well. Like, that's just not something
I modern sports games?
It's not that I don't like them. It's just that for whatever reason, I'm not interested in them. And I used to be a big sports game fan. Like, I was the guy buying the annual NHL game releases, and I was playing, like, Madden. And then I just gradually sort of got out of that and would gravitate to stuff like the Mario Golf game on
GameCube.
On GameCube.
So awesome.
Was amazing.
God, where is that?
I know.
Where is that sequel?
I know. Where is
what are
Mario
you doing,
Golf?
Nintendo?
Yeah, that game was incredible. But that was the last, like... Yeah. I mean, that's not even really a sports game, but that was the last, like... actual sports title that I played a lot, like months and months of play.
Should be careful what we ask for, though. Because you can imagine what it would be like on Wii.
As long as they kept away from... Yeah, if I can use my GameCube controller.
It would be like a Wii Motion Plus game. And yeah.
Tiger Woods on Wii is actually not bad.
Sure, it's... I mean...
But that's not the experience I want.
Yeah, still not what
I don't
want
to be swinging my club like a club.
I mean, and I guess the argument could be made that even, like, a lot of games that aren't based on real sports have become sports. So, like, I still like the competitive aspect. So I'll play StarCraft competitively, even though I'm not especially good at it. And I love playing first-person shooters online. So I still get the same thing that I used to get out of playing, like, my brother in NHL, out of, you know, playing in matches online in FPSs and real-time strategy games. So maybe that's just sort of where that transferred. I mean, I still like watching sports. It's just I don't have an interest in recreating that virtually. I'd rather, I guess, you know, go out and play football or something.
That's crazy.
Even though I'm terrible at it, but yeah, I like the virtual, like entirely virtual competitive experience as opposed to the one that's based on something that's really happening.
Hmm. We're doing something with competitive StarCraft in the office today, aren't we?
Not today. Well, yeah,
they're filming it today.
You won't be seeing it right away on the site, but. There will be something on the site related to competitive StarCraft very soon. That's going to be cool. Hmm. I was also just thinking about action games. I'm not a big action game fan. Like, Greg, you like action games, probably.
What do you...
Well, now, hold on, like... because we've talked about before how we don't like that term. Like,
okay.
What does that mean?
What I mean? It's not very useful, but I'm thinking, like... Well, I'll tell you how I broke out of it. It is Assassin's Creed is the one sort of third-person action game that kind of appealed to me. But, like... Even something like Dead Rising, not that big of a fan of, or Darksiders. You know, these types of games that are more like about... It's a third-person view where you're going around just kind of hacking and slashing at stuff and, you know, solving puzzles and kind of thing. Then again, there's your Uncharted, where that's a totally different... I mean, it's technically based on our old school nomenclature. That's an action game, but I don't view it that way. I view it as like a story-based game... where you do some platforming. So
Uncharted is a 6-hour like movie. That's that's basically a movie. I mean, with some
that you control.
Yeah.
So I don't know. The genres are all messed up now, but
Stupid evolution.
Last question here. Jesse Sessler wants to know what we think of...
Go ask your brother Adam.
Wants to know...
Not a bigger laugh for that? Okay, sorry.
No, why would we... No. Wants to know what we think of Kim Kardashian's single, Jam.
It's terrible.
He says, personally, I think it's a steaming pile of shit.
Oh.
Hearing your opinions on it would be great. You're totally right, Jesse. I've long thought that the reason I like Kim Kardashian so much is that I don't watch her show and I don't ever like hear her talk and I don't really have I don't really have any idea of what she's actually like.
What are you about?
But yeah, hearing that single, man, that was really, really terrible. But oh, and what is worse, that or the Friday song?
Oh, Kim Kardashian's way worse.
Yeah, you think so?
Friday's at least catchy.
Yeah.
And it's just some like 13-year-old girl getting her, you know, feet wet on the music business. Mm. Right, and it's writing for 13-year-old girls, right? She's going to school. I like how there's just the ambiguous line of, I got to get my bowl. Like, I'm sure.
That's hilarious.
She has to get her bowl?
Yeah, for cereal. Like, in the video, it makes sense. She's got to get her bowl.
I'm going to get my bowl.
Yeah.
Huh. Are we excited? I don't want to derail too much, but are we excited about the 3DS, like, in general?
Well, the games aren't there.
Right.
That's it. I mean, you don't get really excited about hardware, do you? You get excited about the games you can play on it and the...
We used to get excited for platform launches, even if there weren't great launch games, though.
Or really? We've been burned so many times,
yeah,
though.
I know, like, well,
I mean, we're always burned. I mean, traditionally, a platform launch is pretty weak. You know, it launches with weak software, right?
But don't you guys, maybe I'm off base here, but don't you guys feel that the interest level in the 3DS launch is lower than previous platform launches have been, even though the launch lineup wasn't that great for those either?
Oh, maybe yes. I'm off base. I mean, I think some of that has to do with just, I mean, the iPhone sitting in front of
exactly.
me.
Exactly, like, that's it. I think interest in using a dedicated gaming handheld is lost.
Yep.
Doesn't it also, at least in some respects, boil down to the fact that it's not revolutionary? It looks just like another DS. It's not
well,
like,
just like you figure like the hardware is just looking at it. Mm-hmm.
Totally, right? And it's just it's just another iteration of that same thing. Mm-hmm. Like when the Wii came and it was this big huge thing. When the 360 came, it was this big huge thing. PS3 was a big huge thing for people who thought they were going to buy it and sell it on eBay. Like there was something different that this thing was doing and it was like awesome and it had all these other features. Whereas this is, it's DS in 3D.
You think that this is going to be a similar launch vibe to the NGP's launch?
I mean, NGP's, I think, too early to tell. Like, right now, if they were saying NGP comes out tomorrow, and, like, based on what we know, I'd be like, cool, but I bet it would have the same vibe because it looks like another PSP.
But the NGP, at least, is, I mean, significantly more powerful than the PSP.
True.
Whereas the 3DS, I mean, there's not, like, a gigantic performance increase, unless there is.
I think the games do look a lot prettier on it.
Like looking like another generation ahead prettier, or is it just sort of incrementally prettier?
I think so. Okay. If you look at like Resident Evil and I mean Ocarina of Time looks better than it ever has.
Like Street Fighter on there and it looked okay. Mm. But I mean I'm sure it's a lot better than what the DS could have done. But I mean,
just wondering if we're like jaded and like if everybody.
Yeah, I don't want to sound jaded, but like I love playing games like you know on the go or whatever as they say as the term is. I turn my phone on because it's already in my pocket.
That's Nintendo's biggest, you know, competition. Like your phone is always with you.
I still don't have the kind of games that I want on my phone.
But Tiny Wings is awesome.
Sure, I wouldn't disagree with that. But I don't have Ocarina of Time or Resident Evil or Metal Gear,
Uncharted,
you know,
whatever,
Peace Walker, whatever. Do
you really want to play those kinds of games on the go?
Well, I want an experience with games like that tailored to my mobile. I don't want the exact same experience. I want them to think about the mobile as something different, a totally different experience with those big games that I love. Mm. I don't think that's really happening right now, which is why everyone's just going, oh, cool, I'll just play for 5 minutes on my iPhone.
The 3DS is a huge gamble.
I mean,
like a gaming platform is, you know, going to be around for five plus years, you know, and Nintendo is betting that people are going to be into 3D for that long a time, you know.
It hurts my eyes. I mean, I don't have astigmatism.
Like using the
3D stuff? Yeah, I mean, my eyes are fine. I mean, I have corrected lenses, but I mean, it's not like I don't have this thing that Damon has. Mm. But for me, I'm not a freak, is what I'm saying. I'm not like...
It's like a gremlin hanging on the side of Damon's head.
Like, when I walk into a room, children don't scatter in horror.
So basically you're saying Damon has Quado hanging off.
But I still, when I play the 3DS, and I haven't done that much, but I kind of go over to Rich George's Jess, pick it up a little bit, play with it. I can feel my head like trying to like make it work, and I hate it. I don't like it.
Before we let you go for this week, I wanted to let you know that I've just released my latest album. It's called Color Beam. It's available right now on iTunes. Just search Damon Hatfield, Color Beam. This is the third track off the record. It's called Tokyo Game Show. So check it out. Everybody take care. This is IGN Game Scoop, and we're out.
Contained herein are the heresies of Radolf Burntwine, erstwhile monk turned traveling medical investigator. Join me as I uncover the blasphemous truth of a plague-ridden world, that ours is not a loving God, and we are not its favored children. The heresies of Radolf Burntwine, coming January 2nd, wherever podcasts are available.